Welcome to this week's Point Community Church Sunday Sermon. If you'd like to learn more about the Point Community Church, please visit our website at tpcc.org.au.
My eldest was born in 2001, which means he was 3 months old when the September 11 terrorist attacks happened. I vividly remember holding him in my arms as I was watching the footage, as I was listening to the drama unfold. And it was sobering. As I held my tiny, completely dependent flesh and blood, as I contemplated a world where terrorism could happen anytime, anywhere, I remember being frightened. I tend to be a bit of a future thinker, and I imagine this day where I would have to encourage my child to take up arms against terrorism. That frightened me. I'm supposed to protect my children. It was a time of deep reflection. Now here's the thing. Every generation of every culture asks the big questions. Now, why is there evil in the world? What is the greater good? What is truth? Who am I? What's my purpose? Where did I come from? How we understand ourselves and our world, it's the quest of every generation. Now, Christians believe that the Bible explains who we are and where we came from. The Bible explains good and evil. The Bible explains the big picture of the world. Now, most of us don't go and study philosophy. So don't worry, I'm not going to give you a philosophy lesson. But we intuitively, most of us tend to ask a couple of questions. Does it work? Is it true? For instance, when we go to vote for a politician, will she be able to do the job? You know, does she work? Is he honest? Does he tell the truth? And in the passage that we're looking at this morning, we're going to see these two questions leveled against God. Does God work, and is God true? Now, the passage doesn't have the words work and true. It uses the words power and wisdom, an ancient way of talking about the same thing. This is a passage where we hear the age-old questions leveled against the core message of Christianity. And what we'll discover is that God's message has a core, concentrated, central message. The cross of Jesus Christ. The cross of Jesus Christ. The cross of Jesus, it's like the flux capacitor from the DeLorean, if you're into Back to the Future. If you want something a little more modern, it's like, I've forgotten what it's called. This is so sad. The Tesseract from the Avengers. I love the Avengers. I can't believe I forgot the Tesseract. The cross of Jesus Christ is the core message of the Christian faith. The cross of Jesus is the power and wisdom of Christianity. And so here's how we're going to look at our passage today. Firstly, we're going to see the confronting cross. Then we're going to look at the age-old quest for power and wisdom. And then we'll finish with a challenge. There are three headings. The confronting cross, power and wisdom, challenge. And so firstly, the confronting cross. Today, we use crosses everywhere, don't we? Particularly for jewelry. In the first century, crosses were barbaric forms of execution. Death on a cross was designed to be slow, painful, humiliating. It's the stuff of horror movies. It's so cruel, the Romans wouldn't put their own citizens on a cross. It was just for their enemies. Romans wouldn't talk about the cross. It was too horrible, too visceral, too disturbing. Today, we use crosses for jewelry, for art, and for tattoos. For us, the cross, it's pleasing to the eye, isn't it? To understand just how confronting the cross in the first century was, what would it be like for us today? Picture someone walking into a room, and on their arm, they've got a tattoo of a gas chamber that killed millions of Jews in World War II. We would instantly think that person is deranged or dangerous. And here's what definitely won't happen. Gas chambers are not going to become popular art. Now, breathe. All of you with a cross dangling from your ears or your neck or on your skin, I'm not against that. It's a good thing. As I'm saying, it's the core message of Christianity. Let's get the cross out there. It's simply setting the scene for how confronting the verse we are about to read would have been for the very first readers. Have you got your Bible open? 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 18. For the word of the cross is folly to those who are perishing. But to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. That verse sets the scene. The scene in this passage is highly confrontational. It's a confrontation that splits the world into two. Now, on one side are those who look at the cross of Jesus and see folly, foolishness, absurdity, stupidity. And on the other side are those who look at the cross of Jesus and see the very power of God. Friends, there is no bigger question in life than what do you make of the cross of Jesus Christ? Now, the next verses help us explore all of that. This isn't a minor question. And so our second heading, power and wisdom. All right, verse 19. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise and the discernment of the discerning I will thwart. The premise of this passage is that God's power and wisdom is displayed at the cross. That quote of that this verse is in quotes in our Bible. It comes from Isaiah chapter 29, verse 14. In Isaiah 29, God is rebuking those who claim to worship God with their words while their heart is far from him. Those who claim to follow God and yet go on and do things that God doesn't want them to do, thinking they can hide it from God. So don't misconstrue these words. God's not poo-pooing wisdom and discernment. No, God is at pains to show the stupidity of trying to seek wisdom apart from God. And yet, isn't that what we all do? As we think about our week ahead, as we think about our life, as we think about our family, as we think about our work, we tend to make all our thoughts around us and give very little thought to God. We're naturally self-centered. Let me put two pieces of evidence on the table. When you look at a group photo and you know you're in the photo, where do your eyes go? We want to go find ourselves. Here's another one. When you've walked away from a discussion where there's been a bit of an argument, what do you immediately do? I should have said that. I should have said this. That would have been the clincher where I would have won the argument. We don't go away and think, how could I have helped that other person more? Now, 1 Corinthians is not about the disagreements we have with each other. 1 Corinthians chapter 1 is about the wisdom of God versus the wisdom of humanity. We hear the modern pushback in God against God today with things like, I cannot believe in a God like that. And you fill in for whatever you want for that. Some part of the Bible, I can't believe in a God like that. I can't believe in a God where there's a world and there's bone cancer in children. You see, our foolishness is such that we think we can stand in judgment over God. We think we set the standards of right and wrong and of good and bad. We think that God must meet our standards. Verse 19, it's not having a go at wisdom and discernment. Verse 19 is God saying, all wisdom and discernment that doesn't include me is bankrupt. Let's continue reading. Verse 20. Where is the one who is wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the debater of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? For since in the wisdom of God, the world did not know God through wisdom, it pleased God through the folly of what we preach. Remember, what we preach is the cross of Christ. We preach Christ. Verse 21. The folly of what we preach to save those who believe. The wise, the scribe, the debater of this age, they were three jobs back in the day. The wise person in the first century was the person who had an entire philosophy to explain all of life. There was the Cynic philosophy, the Epicurean philosophy, the Stoic philosophy is maybe one we've heard a bit more about. Today, we have lots of isms, don't we? Capitalism, pluralism, communism, socialism, hedonism, all trying to explain how life works. Every age, including ours, tends to be arrogant. We look back on our ancestors and we think they knew less than us. They were naive, we're sophisticated. But if we actually think that, we're the ones who are naive. Every generation of every culture has isms, has meta-narratives trying to explain life, explain purpose, explain meaning, explain significance, explain why we're here, explain where we've come from. And 1 Corinthians chapter 1 lays down the challenge. What ism ever thought to explain reality through a God who sent his own loved son to die for his enemies? What other ism explains life through a God who's powerful enough to create a universe and sustain a universe and yet humble enough to be born as a baby so that he could grow into a man who would save the world? Verse 20 also challenges the scribe. A first century scribe was a Jewish religious leader. A Jewish religious leader that particularly looked at the laws about what's right and what's wrong. God is making the challenge. What scribe, what religious system of right and wrong leads us to the cross? You see, the cross of Jesus is a religion that says Jesus did it all. All other moral teachings, all other religions give us a set of rules that we need to do in order to be accepted by God. The cross of Jesus Christ is centered on grace. All other religions are a list of demands. The other challenge in verse 20 is the debater. First century debaters were experts at speech, experts at rhetoric. Probably didn't matter so much what they were saying as much as how they said it. Think about John F. Kennedy's inauguration speech as 35th President of the United States. Now, arguably, the most famous line is, "And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country." That is a captivating, stirring sentence. That's what professional debaters are good at, stirring up the masses to get on board. The challenge of verse 20 is, what other professional debater has ever stirred up the crowds to get on board with a crucified king? Listen again to the end of verse 20. "Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world?" Now, that's not a comparison. That's not God saying, well, the wisdom of the world appears foolish. This is God drawing a line in the sand. All other isms, all other worldviews, all other meta-narratives don't hold anything against the power and wisdom of the cross of Jesus Christ. God has proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that the collective wisdom of the world is foolish. God has proven that all human wisdom, that is human wisdom that wants to leave God out of the picture, is bankrupt. Now, friends, history's unanimous, isn't it? Like, while us humans, we are clever and we have made great achievements, all human worldviews, all human isms come crashing down in a burning heap. Why? We are created by God. There is a God. He has made us. We're not a random chance of molecules bumping into each other. We're created by God. We need God's wisdom to work things out. Now, that's exactly what the final verses declare. Verse 22. "For Jews demand signs and Greeks seek wisdom. But we preach Christ crucified, a stumbling block to Jews and folly to Gentiles." Back in the first century, it's helpful to know that if you were a Jew, the world really was split up into two. There were those who had the Old Testament Jewish faith, and then there was the rest of the nations, the rest of the Gentiles, if you like. And the Jews had become known, actually, for leaving their relationship with God behind. They just wanted to use God for more miracles and more power and more things. That's why it talks about the Jews demand signs. They want more power. And for the Romans, for the Gentiles, they were the ones who loved to sit around and talk forever and a day about philosophy. They searched out wisdom. And so the Jews looked at the cross of Christ and thought how weak Jesus died. The Gentiles looked at the cross and went, how foolish Jesus died. Every generation of every culture searches for truth. And it's generally good truth. Sure, there's a smattering of Stalins and Hitlers and Pol Pots, but for the most part, humanity seeks out truth and seeks out good. Every generation of every culture has its wise sages, its moral police, its clever debaters. There's been numerous isms. The challenge God puts before us, and here we turn to our final point, challenge. The challenge God puts before us is that true truth and true good will only be found at the cross of Jesus Christ. Now, if you're still checking out Christianity, we're glad you're here. Here's my challenge to you. Instead of being turned off by God's bold claim that true truth and true good will only be found in the cross. I mean, that's a bold declaration, isn't it? God saying he's the only one who's got it all. Instead of switching off at this point, my encouragement is, my challenge is, would you be open to the fact that if there is a God, surely his claims to truth and his claims to goodness will offend all of us at some point. Most of us in this room have been raised in the West. And so we hold to the values of individualism. And when we look in on the Bible and we hear God's sexual ethics, we think, well, I don't like that. That's putting a stamp, a dampener on my individual freedom. Now, if we were from a more collective sort of culture, we would be open to God's demands. We're open to those in authority telling us how to live, but we'd be highly offended by the Bible's teaching that, yep, follow your leaders, but if they go against God, call them out. You see, if there is a God who sits above us all, surely all of us will be offended at some point as we read his book. We all have to grapple with this fact. We came from somewhere. If that somewhere is just a random chance of molecules bumping up against each other, then yeah, sure. Let's keep doing the random dance of trying to find an ism. And we'll keep getting what we're getting. Humanity trying to flourish, trying to survive, with a whole heap of conflict and pain along the way. But if we're willing to admit that we didn't come from somewhere, but from someone, and that someone is the God who sent his own son to rescue us, the whole world starts to turn upside down. Now, firstly, it makes sense that there is true truth because we're designed by a creator. And so we can start to lean into him for truth and significance. And friends, the more we lean into him, the more that we find that his truth is true and good. Secondly, and here's the real wisdom of Christianity compared to every other wisdom out there. The cross of Jesus Christ teaches us that love, grace, mercy, kindness, gentleness are the ingredients of true power. The cross of Jesus Christ is power and wisdom. You see, God could have simply crushed his enemies. Instead, God crushed his own son to save his enemies. Now, that sounds foolish to those who seek to rule with power and might. And it sounds silly to those who like to sit around and discuss philosophy all day long. But to those who are willing to admit their own sinfulness and need of a saviour, why, the cross of Jesus Christ is the very power and wisdom of God. Jesus is calling you to lay down your life in order to find your life. Make today the day you hand your life over to God. Not only will you find the God who made you, you'll find the God who loves you. If you don't know who to talk to, come and grab me, but the best thing you could do is let the person who invited you along here today know that you want to check out God a bit more. And finally, there's a challenge to those of us that already have handed our life over to Jesus. Do we lay our life down in loving service to those around us? Or are we still seeking recognition and power and entitlement like everyone else? Are we known for our love and our gentleness and our generosity? Or do we enter into all those toxic debates with just as much toxicity as anyone else? You see, Jesus teaches his followers to lay our life down just as he did for us. At the cross of Jesus Christ, we find the very power and wisdom of God. I'm going to pray. Are we going to sing? And are there no questions? Okay, so then we're just going to sing. Oh, Father, thank you that instead of you turning your back on a humanity that had already turned its back on you, you stepped in, you stepped forward, you sent your own Son to die in our place. Father, I pray that all of us in this room this morning would see your power and your wisdom at the cross of Jesus Christ. He deserves all our praise and all our trust. Father, I pray for anyone here this morning who is yet to hand their life over to Jesus. Would today be the day where that happens? Or at least, very least, beginning a relationship with us so we can share your good news. And Father, for all of us, would we be glad to lay our life down because you laid your life down for us? Amen.
Thanks for listening. Tune in next week for our latest sermon, or better yet, join us live at 9:30 or 5 p.m. Sunday. You can find all the details on our website at tpcc.org.au.